नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 5, Chapter 1. The scene is a discussion. Well, the persons speaking are Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. So when it says, O King, that's Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Parikshit, who's the king. And they're discussing the lineages of kings from Manu. And Manu is a lawgiver for mankind. That's what he does. It's his service. And he rules the earth, and his sons in turn rule the earth. So Swayambhuva Manu, this is very, very early in the whole of creation. Now how do we know what happens at the early parts of creation? We know from authoritative sources. Personality of Godhead, Krishna discloses these things to Lord Brahma, and through disciplic succession they're passed on. Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyas, and Vyas compiled. So, just a little bit back from the fourth canto, the first Manu in the day of Brahma is Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu had a wife, Shatarupa, and Shatarupa and Swayambhuva Manu had five children, two boys, three girls. And the first one that's spoken about in the third canto is the daughter, Devahuti. Devahuti, in her marriage with Kardama Muni, had as a son Kapila Dev, and there's multiple chapters where Kapila Dev's teachings, third canto. And then following, in the son category, it's mentioned in the third canto, that the elder son in Vedic culture would become the king. Priyavrata is the name of the elder son, and he persuaded his father, Swayambhuva Manu, to allow the younger son to become the king so that he, the older son, Priyavrata, could go to the forest and just live a life of devotion and not become implicated in the material energy, the worldly affairs of material energy. So his father consented. Uttanapada became king, and Uttanapada had two sons. His elder son was Dhruva. So there's the whole story of Dhruva. And then Dhruva ruled after his father Uttanapada, and there's a line of kings and a line of kings. And coming towards the end of the fourth canto, we find that the line of kings was interrupted without the detail. So Swayambhuva Manu was in a fix. He needed someone to rule the earth. So because it was time for him to go to the forest and live a life of exclusive devotion. So he approached his elder of the two sons. That's the beginning of this, where this discussion takes place. And so he requested Priyavrata, as your father and as the lawgiver of mankind, Manu, I'm requesting that you please leave the forest, leave your exclusive devotional practice, and become the emperor of the world. And he didn't want to do that. He had no interest at all in doing that. Then some other events happened that describes in this chapter 1. Lord Brahma came. Lord Brahma is the father of Swayambhuva Manu and the grandfather of Priyavrata, and persuaded him on the grounds that you're concerned that you may become entangled in worldly affairs. And you will. But your devotion will carry you through, and I give you my pledge or my benediction that at the end of your ruling as the emperor of the world, you'll return to the fullness of your pure devotion will restore. So Priyavrata agreed, and he lived for a long, long time, because this is Satya Yuga, long, long time as a king, with a number of children and all the affairs of being an emperor. So this fifth canto begins with Maharaj Parikshit, the king, saying to Shukadeva Goswami, wait a minute, I have a doubt, a big doubt. So the big doubt, Prabhupada writes it very succinctly in yesterday's purport. The king had, on the one hand, on the other hand. On the one hand, a person who is advanced in Krishna consciousness, Priyavrata was advanced in Krishna, very advanced. He wasn't a sadhaka, he was very exalted. A person who is advanced in Krishna consciousness cannot embrace materialistic life again. And, on the other side, one who has embraced materialistic life cannot take up Krishna consciousness at any stage of his existence. Although accepting both of these statements, Shukadeva Goswami qualified them by saying that a person who has once absorbed his mind in the glories of the Supreme Personality Godhead may sometimes be influenced by impediments. But he still does not give up his exalted devotional position. And then Prabhupada discussed two primary ways in which impediments can form. And if those impediments seem to cover bhakti, because bhakti is eternal, it's never destroyed, it may be covered. Not here, but an example is given. The tide comes and it goes, and it comes and it goes, and it comes and it goes, and it comes up to a certain point, and it doesn't encroach beyond that point. And then it goes back. High tide, low tide. However, sometimes there's a tsunami, and then the tide keeps coming, and it covers the land. But when the tsunami recedes, or the tidal wave recedes, then it's back to high tide, low tide. So there are exceptional circumstances where a devotee advanced in Krishna consciousness who cannot embrace materialistic life again embraces materialistic life again. And it's circumstantial, and the circumstance recedes, and then it's the fullness of that individual's Krishna consciousness is again manifest. That's what happened to Priyavrata. So the king, Maharaj Parikshit, has this doubt. How did this happen? So one seems to cancel out the other, and the other seems to cancel out the one. With this, that's not possible. With that, this is not possible. So please explain. So we're getting the opportunity of lots of things. But the primary message is the power of bhakti. And connected to the power of bhakti is the power of offense, because one of the two obstacles is Vaishnav Aparad. Vaishnav Aparad has the power to block the power of bhakti. Like the cloud has the power to block the heat and the light of the sun. The heat and the light of the sun doesn't change on the other side of the cloud. But on this side of the cloud, if we don't feel the effect, the fullness of the heat of the light and the heat and the light of the sun. So in the case of Priyavrata, he didn't make an offense, but there was a second category, and that was some higher plan of the Supreme Lord. In this case, his devotee, Swayam Bhuvamanu and Lord Brahma. These two are of the 12 Mahajans, they're two of the 12. And they're saying, please, accept this as a service. Priyavrata has reservation. And we're going to hear this morning's verse and purport. It's appropriate to have reservation about someone needs to sit next to him and keep him awake. Hari Bol, yeah. You're snoring.
Sorry.
Hare Krishna. When we... Bhakti means to engage the senses in the objects of the senses in the mood of service to Krishna. That's the definition. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchite. And, you know, that's the meaning. The senses are engaged in the service of Rishikesha, the master of the senses. When you, there's a qualifier, Sarva Upadi Vinir Muktam, small qualifier. Without having any identification with upadis. What's upadi mean? Upadi means, a very simple definition is this body, or it's gross and subtle. Because we have this body, you know, we can think in terms of I'm this body. I'm a man or a woman, or I'm a grihastha, a sannyasi, or a brahmachari, or vanaprastha, or I'm the kind of person who fill in the blank, and so that's who I am. And that's an upadi, the gross and subtle coverings. They're the language of Jiva Goswami is it's a limiting, restrictive imposition on something. A real simple example is the boundary of a state, or, you know, say boundary of a county, or, you know, St. Louis has its city limits, and then just you cross the city limits and you get a sign that says you've just now entered into something or other. You know, you don't see any line there. But it's, you know, the law, that's an example of an upadi. There's so many, it's an interesting Sanskrit term. A limiting imposition. There's the real thing and then there's the covering of that real thing. So to think the real thing is the covering, that's upadi. So sarva upadi vinir muktam. Then you do the Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. You do that senses and the sense object. But supposing you're not there yet. Supposing, just maybe, there's some identification with the self with the body. Or the self with the mind. Just maybe. Then, you know, bhakti is mixed. So that's like, you know, the light of the sun has this cloud of offense or the mist of ignorance and the fullness of the light of the sun doesn't come through even you doing bhakti. And then there can be, you know, further extremes of that. You're just doing an activity and calling it bhakti when your consciousness is out to lunch or in the gutter or in outer space or somewhere. So it's necessary when performing any type of yoga, bhakti yoga included, you know, you're present with the activity. Your mind is directed towards the object, Krishna. And generally our mind is not. And so our devotion is not full. So we need to practice. That's sadhana bhakti. Bring the mind to Krishna. The purpose of all the rules and regulations is they're meant to assist us for that one thing, bringing the mind to Krishna. And the mind won't go to Krishna unrestrictedly unless we're on the platform of spontaneous devotion. That is, we're attached to Krishna because your mind goes to what you're attached to. The miser's attached to his money and the mother's attached to the daughter, the child, and the Olympic athlete is attached to getting the gold medal and students attached to getting their good grades and, you know, everyone's attached to something. So your attention goes to what you're attached to. So you're beyond sadhana is the stage where the mind just goes to Krishna. And until then, we follow the vidhis, the rules, the regulations that help us go to Krishna. Take the mind to Krishna and we go to Krishna. So behind where the mind goes is also what you want. Do you want to be with Krishna? Or you're not sure. Or you repeat it with your tongue, but your heart is somewhere else. So the question back to the topic, the question being raised by Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadev, just do it philosophically. What's the power of bhakti in the circumstance where one appears to be attached? So that's very subtle. There, it can be appear to be attached, not attached, one can appear to be detached and be attached. And all kinds of other various spectrum of colors of all of this. Karmatma kamyena sharira bandha. We referred to this verse a couple of days ago. Spoken by Rishabhdev. Where, as long as one accepts the body as the self, one is guaranteed to be engaged in fruitive activity. And as long as one is engaged in fruitive activity, the mind is going to be colored. Karmatma kamyena sharira bandha, and then you're gross and subtle, you're bound. Even if you can get rid of one of the ropes, there's another set of ropes. Bhakti has the power to cut those ropes. But we have to want bhakti, and not just a behavior and call it bhakti. We have to want bhakti. So what's the power of bhakti in dealing with being with objects of the senses and not being attached to those objects of the senses? It's a mystery. If you think about chapter 3 Bhagavad Gita or chapter 5 Bhagavad Gita, same topic. Same topic. You know, that the circumstance is different. It's Arjuna not wanting to go to the battlefield because. And so his idea is walk away from the objects of the senses. Walk away from prescribed duty. Just take on another duty. Yeah. And Krishna is saying, no, you have a duty. I want you to do your duty. And you don't have the qualification to not do your duty. You don't do your duty, you'll incur sin. Your argument is, if you do your duty, you'll incur sin. My argument is, if you don't do your duty, you'll incur sin. So how do you do your duty without being entangled? That's the question. It's the mystery of the power of bhakti to cut the ropes. And the whole idea of bhakti yoga is to nourish bhakti, not just to do more or achieve more or, you know, passion things. We do things for the purpose of pleasing Krishna, for that reason, and not for the I've achieved things reason. So that's the setup of the dialectic, the tension between, on the one hand, but on the other hand. And so this chapter is exploring that question. What's the power of bhakti to cut the ropes of material affinity while engaging in practical activity that, generally speaking, spells material affinity? I mean, male-female association spells material affinity. Somehow it just has a way of doing that. And the other one is money. It's like a mantra. Money and the opposite sex. Put them together and you're covered. The consciousness is covered in forgetfulness of trying to be the enjoyer of those two things. And, you know, even a good-spirited person can easily get into that, and then, you know, you buy into that and something else happens besides happiness. Okay, so here's text 6, this morning's verse. All that was background. I'll read text 5 and then I'll read text 6. Shukadev Goswami said, "What you have said is correct. The glories of the Supreme Personality Godhead, who is praised in eloquent transcendental verses by such exalted personalities as Brahma, are very pleasing to great devotees and liberated persons. One who is attached to the nectarian honey of the Lord's lotus feet and whose mind is always absorbed in his glories may sometimes be checked by some impediment, but he still never gives up the exalted position he has acquired." Text 6. Shukadev Goswami continued, "My dear King," Maharaj Parikshit, "Prince Priyavrata," because Priyavrata hasn't become king yet, he's still like on the fence, deciding, reluctant. "Prince Priyavrata was a great devotee because he sought the lotus feet of Narada, his spiritual master, and thus achieved the highest perfection in transcendental knowledge. With advanced knowledge, he always engaged in discussing spiritual subjects and did not divert his attention to anything else. The prince's father then asked him to take charge of ruling the world. He tried to convince Priyavrata that this was his duty, as indicated in the revealed scriptures. Prince Priyavrata, however, was continuously practicing bhakti yoga by constantly remembering the Supreme Personality Godhead, thus engaging all the senses in the service of the Lord. Therefore, although the order of his father could not be rejected, the prince did not welcome it. Thus, he very conscientiously raised the question," very tactful, "whether he might be diverted from devotional service by accepting the responsibility of ruling over the world," which is exactly the same, we discussed this earlier, the doubt that Brahma has before he does the creation. Now he's had this perfect realization about Krishna, and then awaiting him is the service of creating a universe, and he's reluctant because he doesn't want to get entangled. Here's Priyavrata ruling this one of the planets in the universe, and he's reluctant. Rightly so. If he wasn't reluctant, that would be a disqualification. Rubbing his hands together, thinking, great, now I get to rule the planet. Fantastic. I was just waiting for this. All my austerities so I could get that. Purport. Nice message. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung, Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nistara Payeche Keva. Translation, without serving the lotus feet of a pure Vaishnava or spiritual master, no one has ever attained perfect liberation from material bondage. Prince Privrata regularly served the lotus feet of Narada, and thus the prince perfectly understood transcendental subjects in truth. And the Sanskrit term here is sa tatvata. Sa tatvata. We discussed this last two classes. Tatva means truth or spiritual reality. Sa tatvata. Sa is like that. It's like a indicating the tatva. The word sa tatvata means that Priyavrata knew all the facts about the spirit soul, the Supreme Personality Godhead, the relationship between the spirit soul and the Supreme Personality Godhead, and he also knew all about this material world and the relationship of the spirit soul and the Supreme Lord within the material world. Thus, the prince decided to engage himself only in rendering service to the Lord. Paragraph. This is the but. When Priyavrata's father, Swayambhu Manu, requested him to accept the responsibility of ruling over the world, he did not welcome the suggestion. This is the symptom of a great liberated devotee. Even though engaged in worldly affairs, he does not take pleasure in them, but remains always absorbed in the Lord's service. And then Prabhupada gets really practical, besides, you know, kings. While thus serving the Lord, he deals externally with worldly affairs without being affected. For example, although he has no attraction for his children, he cares for them and educates them to become devotees. Similarly, he speaks to his wife with affectionate words, but he is not attached to her. By rendering devotional service, the devotee acquires all the good qualities of the Supreme Lord. And here's Krishna. Lord Krishna had 16,000 wives, all of them very beautiful. And although he dealt with each one of them as his beloved husband, he was not attracted or attached to any of them. Of course, spiritually is another thing. In the same way, no, all the rest of us. Although a devotee may enter family life and act very affectionately towards his wife and children, he is never attached to these activities. Curious. There's one more paragraph, though, which I'll read, but I'll just comment on this. Impersonalism is very popular. That's frustrating, so make it zero. One of the questions that you had asked some time ago. You know, in this relationship, you know, I feel uncomfortable. So just like, wall. So I don't have to deal with the person. Pull back. And then, you know, the world, everything in this world, there's duality, there's this and that. So maybe I can try to be, you know, friendly and affectionate to some and then impersonal to others. And then even in those relationships that I feel some affection for, when there's a problem, it's a wall, just like self-preservation. And impersonalism takes it on a big scale, in general. specifically, you know, the whole material world is false, and there's only one thing that's real, and the one thing that's real is impersonal Brahman, and I'm that. Tatvamasi, that's what the Chandogya Upanishad says, I'm that. So I just like, call this, give it a bad name, and I'm that. See you later. Renounce the world. It's immature. As far as the realization of the absolute truth is concerned, it's an immature realization based upon frustration. And the higher position is the position of recognizing the Supreme as a person and turning to the Supreme Person in one's relationship and one's place of shelter. Then in turn, other things that may be, you know, nice or not nice by the mind's calculation. I don't see it in terms of I like it, I don't like it. I see it in terms of my service to Krishna, and this is one service to Krishna, that's another service to Krishna. How to best serve Krishna. And Krishna is in the center. So including in family life, Krishna is in the center. It may be that I'm in family life because I'm disposed this way, but let me check the tendency of being the worldly enjoyer, because that will cause me to forget Krishna and become entangled in forgetfulness of Krishna, material life, materialistic life. Let me maintain, cultivate my remembrance of Krishna, attachment to Krishna in this situation. That's personalism. Attachment to Krishna is to be cultivated. Final paragraph. This verse states that by serving the lotus feet of his spiritual master, Prince Brihavrata very soon attained the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness. Well, he had already done that before his father came and said, can you take up this service? This is the only way to advance in spiritual life, as stated in the Vedas, from the Svetashvatara Upanishad. Yasya deve para bhaktir, yata deve tata garau, tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Prakashante means it becomes becomes manifest. All knowledge, all realization becomes manifest in the heart of such a person who has unflinching faith in Guru and Krishna. Translation, if one has unflinching faith in the Supreme Lord and the Spiritual Master, the essence of all Vedic knowledge is revealed to him. So we just heard that Prihavrata had that capacity. A devotee always thinks of the Lord continuously while chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. The words Krishna and Hare immediately remind him of all the Lord's activities. Since his entire life is engaged in the service of the Lord, a devotee cannot forget the Lord at any time. Just as an ordinary man always engages his mind in material activities, a devotee always engages his mind in spiritual activities. This is called Brahma Satra, S-A-T-R-A, or meditating upon the Supreme Lord always. Prince Prihavrata was perfectly initiated into this practice by Sri Narada. Now we don't hear so much in this little section about Narada, but Narada was the spiritual master of Dhruva and Uttanapada, and there's a whole line. He was the spiritual master of Swami Bhuvamanu and, you know, all the sons and daughters. And in the whole generation after generation, and generation after generation. So similarly with Prihavrata. Prihavrata understood how to do what he did and achieved what he did by the grace of Narada. By the grace of Narada, he was fixed on the personality of Godhead, but he was simultaneously, it wasn't like either or, he was simultaneously absorbed in meditating upon and carrying out the instructions of and being in his relationship with Narada. It's not a binary choice. They go together. Hare Krishna. And it's consistent. Here, another example is Prahlad. When he's speaking to Lord Nrisingadev, he's attached to the personality of Godhead because of his attachment to Narada. So his request of Lord Nrisingadev, you want to give me a benediction, please give me more of Narada's association so that Narada can then train me how to best serve you. He's trained me to become attached to you. Now you're here. How to best serve you? Narada. Please give me Narada's association. More and more. Prabhupada uses the phrase being attached to the lotus feet of Narada. What does that mean? It means the instructions given by Narada become the life and soul of the devotee. In this case, it's Prince Priyavrata. And that continued as he became King Priyavrata. And then when he became King Priyavrata, his father swapped places with him. His father went to the forest. And Narada guided his father. You know, here's how you do it. And then Priyavrata, after ruling for some time, went back to the forest and again guided by Narada. Narada is a he's a renunciate. We never hear of Narada having a wife. He didn't. He was perfectly renounced. At the same time, one last thing and I'm done. The nature of the message of the Bhagavatam, or the nature of advancing a spiritual life, is move in the direction of detachment. It doesn't mean move in the direction of taking sannyas, although that may be the outcome. Move in the direction of detachment. Decrease one's affinity for matter by, and that will help, increasing attachment for spirit. There's a very nice verse written by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. There's actually 100 verses written by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Sanskrit. Two of them are found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and one of them is particularly famous amongst the followers of Lord Chaitanya, and it begins, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shikshartam Ekam Purushak Puranam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari. So it's a glorification of Lord Chaitanya where he gave this message of Vairagya Vidya. Vairagya means detachment and Vidya means knowledge. Yeah, but by the medium of bhakti. Same as what's said here about, you know, that Priyavrata had realized knowledge, that Yasya Devi Parabhaktir verse, because he had implicit faith in Guru and Krishna. Implicit faith in Guru and Krishna. So he followed Narada, he followed Krishna, and he had realization of all truths, sa tatvata. So he knew perfectly well what's what, because of being situated in pure devotion. So equipped with knowledge, detachment is natural. So, so the context here is, for all of us, the process of bhakti requires a willingness, a spirit, to go in the direction of eternal, and thereby diminishing affinity for the temporary, and being the enjoyer of it. Somehow or other, I'll figure it out how to be the enjoyer of it. We have our, you know, particular liking of how to enjoy it, or try to. That affinity is to be diminished in favor of the affinity for spirit. And the other way, as affinity for spirit becomes stronger, the affinity for enjoying matter diminishes. It's one of the statements of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. How do you know that you're advancing in Krishna consciousness? You know, this side is becoming stronger, that side is diminishing. The affinity for... When you have discretionary time, your mind isn't going to affinity for matter. Or when you're in contact with the objects of the senses, the mind isn't going to affinity for enjoying those objects. Let's say money. A devotee, a practitioner of bhakti doesn't get all ramped up when here comes the money. It's, you know, this is a facility for serving Krishna. That's very nice. Krishna is very kind. And then there isn't, and Krishna is very kind. Like Sudama Brahman. He didn't get all excited, oh, now I've got a palace. He was just appreciating Krishna's kindness when it was nothing and when it was something. That's the mindset of a devotee, because they're attached to Krishna and the kindness of Krishna, whatever the circumstances. So when the objects of the senses are there or not there, I'm not feeling happy or deprived. I'm feeling happy being in my relationship with Krishna, and in either circumstance. That's a sign that we're advancing. So that's this vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga. That's Lord Chaitanya. That's what's the knowledge that we may gain by reading Srimad Bhagavatam or associating with devotees and hearing the topics of devotional service. It's to enhance our devotional service, enhance our the mood of bhakti, because that's the operative principle, the mood of bhakti. I forget what the other thing was that I wanted to say. There's one other item. Wanted to end with. Let's see if it comes around again. Any comments or questions? Yes?
So we say like Krishna is equal to everyone, and but still he favors his devotee because of the bhakti and the devotee to him. So in the same context, can we see the example which is given on the say that he has no attraction for his children and he cares for them, just educate and educate the, them to become devotees, and no attached to the wife, but, so that's the same content.
You're reciting the purport. I don't understand the question.
So that with the same...
Make it short, please.
In a family life, so that we are doing our duty...
Be attached to Krishna. That's the message. Be attached to Krishna. We discussed this yesterday. I don't mind saying it again. There's a natural affection. It's not, you know, get a dagger and stab the affection and kill it. You know, for a mother for her child, or the wife for her husband, or the husband for the wife. It's not, you know, get a dagger out and kill it. That's not the message. There's a natural that we, you know, that undue attachment abhinivesh. So do that. And in doing that, recognize this is an impetus that comes from, ultimately it comes from Krishna. So it's not to say Krishna didn't care about Rukmini or Satyabhama or any one of the other queens. He didn't care. He was just an actor on a stage, just pretending to be, a loving husband and father, and he really didn't care. So as a mother and a wife and as a member of the community, there's natural affection. Let that natural affection be connected to the transcendental affection and attachment for Krishna. And so the duty, not in a cold, impersonal sense, is what I'm getting at. It connect that to Krishna, because where does that come from? It comes from Krishna. So do that. Feel those feelings and do those, quote, duties for Krishna. For Krishna. And that's, that's the art of devotional service, the art of bhakti. Not undue attachment or affinity. Appropriate. So what's appropriate? Within the codes of the Vedas, there's something that tells us what's appropriate. So we do those things with natural affection, but not attachment, not undue affection, overly attached. For the purpose of, and on the strength of our attachment for Krishna. So supposing you're not there yet, you're just a beginning sadhaka. What's a beginning sadhaka to do? Well, be careful. That's what we're supposed to do. And understand the purpose behind the practices of sadhana and strengthen the bhakti principle through those practices of sadhana. Recognizing I got this whole mountain of covering over me. So I have to be very careful. Something like a discussion I was having yesterday with one devotee. The comment was, I guess what I'm supposed to do is think like I'm really tiny. And I have a tendency for these four defects. Yeah. But it's not low self-esteem or lack of self-confidence. The self-confidence is confident in Krishna. That's self-confidence. Krishna is very kind. Krishna is seeing this effort that I'm making, although I'm very limited, very tiny, very covered. Krishna is seeing my effort. Krishna will help me. And you cultivate that in the best bhakti. So do the motherly duties and the wifely duties and the other worldly duties in that way. In the spirit of cultivating attachment for Krishna. Easier to say than to do, but that's our assignment. Okay? Yeah.
Pretty much, if I remember correctly, it's been 3 years you mentioned you had an opportunity to serve as a personal servant to Srila Prabhupada, and then you didn't choose to take the position.
Well, it floated past. I wasn't asked if I wanted to. There was a gap. And someone was discussing with me that he was being asked, and he was very clear. No. I wasn't asked. He was asked, and he was just sharing with me. And he said, I've seen what happens to people that have that opportunity. They don't last long.
So taking myself in consideration, I was introspecting as what kind of offenses I've been doing.
Well, the main consideration is familiarity breeds contempt. Just like, pujaris. When you're out here seeing the deity on the altar, there's a distance between you and the deity. So that distance helps create respect. But now one becomes a pujari, and you're directly touching the deity and handling the deity, and one can, in that intimacy of service, if one isn't careful, if one isn't protected by proper humility and brahminical quality, one can take it as something material and make offense to the deity. So only qualified people should be, you know, directly serving the deity. And that brahminical qualification shouldn't just be the rubber stamp, it should be actually the quality. So, for back to you, it's, you know, continue to be properly respectful. Cultivate that very carefully. And guard against, on the negative side, guard against familiarity and then infamiliarity. Just like, you know, take it away from the spiritual master-disciple relationship, supposing it's just another one of the prabhus. As you get to know another prabhu by, you know, proximate living, you find out, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are, just as they'll come to know your strengths and weaknesses. And it's very easy to start criticizing because of that familiarity. So then, what to do? Don't have friends. Because then you might, if you have friends, you might become familiar and start to criticize. So stay in the mode of service. And avoid the, you know, that tendency to become familiar. So the protection is respect.
When the humility comes into meditation, the receiver mode is active and they can recognize.
I didn't say the beginning part again.
When I meditate on the humility mode.
Yourself, your own humility.
Trying to respect towards you, then I can recognize the mercy is flowing in as soon as it shifts and it closes back.
Well, that's the mind. And, you know, you don't have control of your mind. You know that. It's not an embarrassment. You don't have control of your mind. And there's a tendency for your mind to go way over here, and there's a tendency for your mind to go way over there.
Extremely.
Yeah, it's just like in a flash, it's way over there. What happened? But it goes. So it's risky. It's risky. Well, be careful. Or step back from the service. You can't be careful. Because if you're not careful, you're in the ditch. Knowing that the mind can go way over there real fast. Yikes, what happened? You know, you're not even saying that, yikes, what happened? You're in the ditch. So be careful. Yeah.
Question is from the part of class when you were speaking about Krishna encouraging Arjuna to do his duty.
Krishna encouraging Arjuna to do what?
His duty.
To do his duty, okay.
I was reading in Mother Yamuna's book, she went through a period in Vrindavan where Prabhupada was encouraging her not to associate too closely with Prabhus because she was being criticized and it was reflecting on him. And at the same time, she had service where she had to closely interact with them in the Krishna Balaram temple. And she felt like a
conflict
of interest. And so my question is, if a person is able to move on beyond I like or I don't like to considering acting on service, but they have conflicting services, how does a devotee approach that?
Well, in that particular circumstance, I was focused on the circumstance first, besides the principle. There are ways in which interaction between men and women, both sides, not just women in relation to men, but men in relation to women, where there can be a wholesomeness and a very clear detachment, service, and otherwise, no, you know, the interaction is very limited. Prabhupada's way of saying this is, now instructing the brahmachari, for the brahmachari, conversation with a woman should be restricted to please pass the salt. It's just in relation to service only. You're in the kitchen, or just go and get the salt, or just, you know, and that's it. There's not any other kind of dialogue that may be perceived by third parties or perceived by the other party as, oh, he's interested in her as an object of happiness, as opposed to just service. So from both sides. I mean, in Harinam Ashram, there's some women that are staying there, and there's no problem, because it's really clear with, you know, there's no energy going on, and, you know, vice versa. A woman can understand, is like, have a special radar equipment. What's going, you know, when someone is showing the other kind of attention. You know, Krishna's equipped women with that radar. They understand. And then, so given this instruction that Prabhupada gave to Jamuna, it doesn't mean don't do your services. It means be very, you know, be extra careful, because there may be criticism of Prabhupada, and we don't want criticism of Prabhupada, so you do the service where you're being extra careful. Not impersonal, but extra careful. And come and do service, and just, even when doing service, not ostentatious, and just do the service and then gone. And it's consistently like that. That's a whole other program than, you know, a social kind of interaction along with doing the service. You don't be impolite, but just service. Now, the principle that you're asking about is when it seems that there's a conflict of service. You know, that's not... The answer to that one is... the answer that Maharaj Yudhisthira gives to the Yaksha in Mahabharata. Very difficult. Therefore, we should refer to the Mahajans, the great souls, and what have the great souls done in such, or somewhat similar circumstances, and you look to that, what to do. Because it can be perplexing. That's a little bit like the question the Shravan was just asking, on the one hand and on the other hand. So it's either take due precaution or don't do the service, because you don't want to end up in the ditch. Okay? Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.